hello and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we bring back two of our favorite literary characters, Bertie Wooster and his man Jeeves. The production is an adaptation of P.G. Wodehouse's short story entitled Jeeves in the Springtime. The scene opens on a beautiful spring day, but since it is not yet noon, Bertie has not yet risen and is lying supine in bed.
Morning, Jeeves.
Good morning, sir.
Jeeves put the cup of tea softly on the table by my bed, and I took a refreshing sip. Just right, as usual. Not too hot, not too sweet, not too weak, not too strong, not too much milk, and not a drop spilled in the saucer. A most amazing man, Jeeves. So competent in every respect. Rather than barging into my room while I'm still asleep, Jeeves seems to know when I awaken by a sort of telepathy. He always floats in with the cup exactly 2 minutes after I come to life. It makes the day a lot easier. How's the weather, Jeeves?
Exceptionally clement, sir.
Say, Jeeves, a man I met at the club last night told me to bet on Privateer for the 2 o'clock race this afternoon. How about it?
I should not advocate it, sir. The stable is not sanguine.
That's enough for me. Too often I have gone against your advice and lost my shirt. Speaking of shirts, have those mauve ones I ordered arrived yet?
Yes, sir. I sent them back.
Sent them back?
Yes, sir. They would not have become you.
Well, I must say I rather like those shirts, but I bow to your superior knowledge. Was I weak? I don't know. Most fellows would confine their valet to creasing trousers, but it's different with Jeeves. Right from the first day he came to me, I have looked on him as a sort of guide, philosopher, and friend.
Mr. Littles rang up the telephone a few moments ago, sir. I informed him that you were not yet awake.
Did he leave a message?
No, sir. He mentioned that he had a matter of importance to discuss with you, but confided no details.
Oh, well, I expect I shall be seeing him at the club.
No doubt, sir.
I wasn't in a fever to see Bingo Little. He's a chap I was at school with, and we still see a lot of each other. He's the nephew of old Mortimer Little, who recently retired. You've probably heard of Little's liniment. It limbers up the legs. So Bingo bounces around town on a comfortable allowance from his uncle and leads a leisurely life. After breakfast, I went to the window to inspect the day. It certainly was one of the best and brightest. Jeeves, I said.
Sir?
You were absolutely right about the weather. It is a beautiful morning.
Decidedly, sir.
Spring and all that.
Yes, sir.
Ah, it makes me feel poetic, Jeeves. In the springtime, a livelier iris gleams upon the burnished dove.
So I have heard, sir.
Righto. Then bring me my yellowish shoes and the old green Hamburg. I'm going into the park to do pastoral dances.
As you wish, sir.
Maybe you know how I was feeling that day, when the sky's a light blue, with cotton wool clouds, and there's a bit of a breeze blowing from the west, an uplifted sort of feeling, romantic, if you know what I mean. I'm not much of a ladies' man, but on this particular morning, I wanted some charming girl to approach me breathlessly and ask me to save her from assassins or something. So it was a bit of an anticlimax when I merely ran into young Bingo Little, looking perfectly foul.
Hello, Bertie.
My good man. Why are you wearing a tie with horseshoes on it?
Oh, this? It was a gift.
Jeeves tells me you want to talk to me about something.
Eh? Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, what is it?
Listen, Bertie, do you like the name Maybelle?
No.
No?
No.
You don't think there's a kind of music in the name, like the wind rustling gently through the treetops?
No.
Well... Of course you wouldn't. You always were a fat-headed worm without any soul, weren't you?
Precisely. Who is she? Tell me all. Ever since I met Bingo, he was perpetually falling in love with someone, generally in the spring, which seems to act on him like magic.
You'd better come along and meet her at lunch.
An excellent suggestion. Are you meeting her at the Ritz?
Near the Ritz.
He was geographically accurate. About 50 yards east of the Ritz, there is one of those bleak, desolate restaurants most often referred to as a diner. And into this young Bingo dived like a homing pigeon, and before I had time to say a word, we were wedged in at a table. This confused me, since Bingo was well enough off, considering his uncle's allowance. Why then had he invited his beloved to dine at this godforsaken eatery? Just then, the waitress arrived, rather a pretty girl. "Aren't we going to wait?" I started to say to Bingo, when I caught sight of his face and stopped. The man was goggling, practically slobbering on the table.
Hello, Mabel.
Hello.
Mabel, this is Bertie Wooster, a pal of mine.
Pleased to meet you. Nice morning.
Yes, gorgeous.
You see, I'm wearing the tie.
Yes, it looks perfect on you.
Personally, if anyone had told me that a tie like that looked perfect on me, I would have hit him in the nose, regardless of their age or gender. But poor old Bingo simply got all flustered with gratification and smirked in the most gruesome manner.
Well, what's it going to be today?
I'll have a cup of cocoa, cold veal and ham pie, slice of fruit cake, and a macaroon. Same for you, Bertie?
I gazed at the man, revolted. That he could think me capable of eating this sort of stuff cut me to the quick.
Or how about a bit of hot steak pudding with a milkshake to wash it down?
You know, the way love can change a fellow is really frightful. This man before me, who spoke so carelessly of macaroons and milkshakes, was the man I had seen in happier days telling the head waiter at Claridge's exactly how he wanted his lobster Newberg in a light cream sauce. Ghastly, ghastly. A roll with butter and a small coffee seemed the only things on the list that hadn't been specially prepared by members of the Bourgier family as a torture for those who had a grudge against. So I chose them, and Mabel hopped to it.
Well?
Very nice.
You don't think she's the most wonderful girl you ever saw?
Oh, absolutely. Where did you meet her?
It was at a dance at Camberwell.
What on earth were you doing at a dance in Camberwell?
Your man Jeeves asked me if I would buy a couple of tickets. It was for some charity or other.
Jeeves? I didn't know he went in for that sort of thing.
Well, I suppose he has to relax every now and then. Anyway, he was there dancing in a most debonair fashion. I wasn't going to go at first, but then decided to attend as a lark. Oh, Bertie, think what I might have missed.
What might you have missed?
Mabel, you chump. If I hadn't gone, I wouldn't have met Mabel.
Oh.
Bertie, I want your advice.
All right.
Well, not your advice, actually, because that wouldn't be much good to anybody. I mean, you're a pretty consummate ass, aren't you? Not that I want to hurt your feelings, of course.
No, I see that.
What I wish you would do is put the whole thing to that fellow Jeeves and see what he suggests. You've often told me that he has helped other pals of yours out of messes.
He has never let me down yet.
Then put my case to him.
What case?
My problem.
What problem?
Why, you dimwit, my uncle, of course. Why do you think my uncle's going to say to all this? If I spring it on him cold, he'd tie himself in knots.
One of these emotional fellows, eh?
Somehow we must brace him to receive the news. But how?
Ah.
That's a lot of help, You see, I'm pretty well dependent on my uncle. If he cut off my allowance, I would be destitute. So I need you to tell Jeeves and see if he can't scare up a happy ending somehow. Tell him my future is in his hands. Well, what about $10? Jeeves would give his offer $10, wouldn't he?
Oh, undoubtedly. I wasn't surprised that Bingo wanted to involve Jeeves in his private affairs. It was the first thing I would have done if I'd been in his position. If anybody could fix things for poor old Bingo, he could. I stated the case to him that night after dinner. Oh, Jeeves!
Sir?
Are you busy right now?
No, sir.
I mean, not doing anything in particular.
No, sir. It is my practice at this hour to read some edifying book, but If you desire my services, this can easily be postponed or indeed abandoned altogether.
Well, I want your advice. It's about Mr. Little.
Young Mr. Little, sir, or the elder Mr. Little, his uncle, the liniment magnate who lives on Bouncy Lane.
How did you know he lives on Bouncy Lane?
I am on terms of some intimacy with the elder Mr. Little's cook, and sir. In fact, we have an understanding.
Do you mean you're engaged?
It may be said to amount to that, sir.
Well, well.
She is a remarkably excellent cook, sir. And now, what was it you wished to ask me about, Mr. Little?
I sprang the details on him. And that's how the matter stands, Jeeves. I think we ought to rally round a bit and help poor Bingo. Tell me about old Mr. Little. What sort of gentleman is he?
A somewhat curious character, sir. Since retiring from business, he has become a great recluse and now devotes himself almost entirely to the pleasures of dining.
A greedy hog, you mean?
I would not perhaps take the liberty of describing him in precisely those terms, sir. He is a gourmet, and for that reason sets a high value on Miss Watson's services.
The cook?
Yes, sir.
Well, then, it looks like our best plan would be for Bingo to talk to him after dinner one night, when he is sated and all that.
The difficulty, sir, is that at the moment Mr. Little is on a diet, owing to an attack of gout.
Things begin to look wobbly, Jeeves.
No, sir, I fancy that the elder Mr. Little's misfortune may be turned to the younger Mr. Little's advantage. I was speaking only the other day to Mr. Little's valet, and he was telling me that it has become his principal duty to read to Mr. Little in the evenings. If I were in your place, sir, I would send young Mr. Little to read to his uncle.
Ah, yes, a nephew's devotion, you mean, a touching act.
Partly that, sir, but I would rely more on young Mr. Little's choice of literature. I would be happy to select books for Mr. Little to read. Perhaps I might explain my idea further.
I can't say I quite grasp it yet.
The method which I advocate is direct suggestion, sir, consisting as it does of driving an idea home by constant repetition. If young Mr. Little were to read day after day to his uncle a series of narratives in which marriage with young persons of an inferior social status was held up as both feasible and admirable, I fancy it would prepare the elder Mr. Little's mind for the reception of the information that his nephew wishes to marry a waitress.
Are there any books of that sort nowadays?
Yes, sir. There are a great many, neglected by the reviewers, but widely read. You have encountered All for Love by Rosie M. Banks?
No.
Nor A Red, Red Summer Rose by the same author?
No.
I have an aunt, sir, who owns an almost complete set of Rosie M. Banks's works. I could easily borrow several volumes. They make very light, attractive reading.
Well, it's worth trying.
I would certainly recommend it, sir.
All right, then. Trottle round to your aunt's tomorrow and grab a couple of the juiciest. At least we can give it a go.
Precisely, sir.
Bingo reported 3 days later that Rosie M. Banks was just the ticket. His uncle had objected at first, not being much of a fan of fiction, but Bingo got chapter one of All for Love past his guard before he knew what was happening. And after that, there was no looking back. Since then, they had finished A Red, Red Summer Rose, Madcap Myrtle, and Only a Factory Girl. After such reading, he always stayed on for dinner, and the food prepared by old Little's cook had to be tasted to be believed. For a fellow who'd been living for weeks on macaroons and milkshakes, it must have been heaven. Anyhow, things seemed to be buzzing along quite satisfactorily, and Bingo said he had an idea, which, he thought, was going to clinch the thing. He wouldn't tell me what it was, but he said it was a gem. We make progress, Jeeves.
That is very satisfactory, sir.
Bingo tells me that when he came to the big scene in Only a Factory Girl, his uncle gasped like he had been pinched.
Indeed, sir.
Where Lord Claude takes the girl in his arms, you know, and says,
I am familiar with the passage, sir. It is distinctly moving. It was a great favorite of my aunt's.
I think we're on the right track.
It would seem so, sir.
In fact, this looks like another of your success stories.
Thank you very much, sir. I endeavor to give satisfaction.
About a week later, Bingo blew in with news.
My uncle wants you to lunch with him tomorrow.
Me? Why me? He doesn't know I exist.
Oh, yes, he does. I've told him about you.
What have you told him?
Oh, various things, this and that, you know. Anyhow, he wants to meet you and take my advice. You should go.
It struck me that there was something odd, almost sinister, about young Bingo's manner. He had something up his sleeve.
I think lunch tomorrow will be something special.
But I have never met your uncle.
You fathead, didn't I just say that I've been telling him all about you, that you're my best pal, all that sort of thing.
But even so, why are you so keen on me going?
Well, I told you I had an idea. This is it. I want you to spring the news on him. I don't have the nerve to do it myself.
What? Well, neither do I.
And you call yourself a pal.
Yes, I am your pal, but there are limits.
Bertie, I saved your life once.
When?
Didn't I? Must have been some other fellow then. Well, anyway, we grew up together. You can't let me down.
Oh, all right. But when you say you don't have the nerves to do something, you underestimate yourself. A fellow who has...
All right. I must be off. 1:30 tomorrow. Don't be late.
I must say, the more I contemplated the situation, the less I liked it. However, the word of a Wooster is his bond and all that sort of rot. So at 1:30 the next day, I totted up the steps of number 16 Bouncy Lane and punched the bell. And half a minute later, I was up in the drawing room, shaking hands with the fattest man I've ever seen in my life. His hands enfolded mine like a boa constrictor. I was not sure I would be able to extract it without the use of machinery.
Mr. Wooster, I'm gratified. I'm proud. I am honored. You are very young to have accomplished so much.
I couldn't follow his train of thought. My Aunt Agatha has abused me incessantly since childhood, making the point that mine is a life wasted. I have done absolutely nothing of significance or importance. I was wondering if he had me mixed up with someone else when the telephone rang. And the maid came in to say that it was for me. I picked up and heard Bingo on the other end of the line.
Hello? So you're there. Good man. uncle seem pleased to see you?
Absolutely elated. I can't figure it out.
Oh, that's all right. I just called to explain. The fact is, I know you won't mind, but I told him that you were the author of those books I've been reading to him.
What?
Yes! I said that Rosie M. Banks was your pen name, and you didn't want it generally known because you were a modest, retiring sort of fellow. He'll listen to you now. Hang on every word. A good idea, don't you think? Jeeves would be so proud of me. Oh, and remember, my allowance must be increased. I cannot possibly marry on what I'm getting now. Well, good luck!
And he hung up. You know, I always look back on that lunch with a sort of aching regret. It was the lunch of a lifetime, but I was so worked up over the ghastly situation Bingo had put me in that I might as well have been eating sawdust for all the good it did me. Old Little began talking literature from the start.
My nephew has probably told you that I've been making a close study of your books.
Yes, he did mention it. How do you like them?
Mr. Wooster, I am not ashamed to say that tears came into my eyes as I listened to them. It amazes me that such a young man as yourself can plumb human nature so deeply. To play with so unerring a hand on the quivering heartstrings of your reader, to write novels so human, so moving, so vital.
Oh, well, it's just a knack. Perspiration was beating my forehead.
Do you find the room a trifle warm?
Oh, no, no, not at all. Just right.
Then it's the pepper. If my cook has a fault, it is that she sometimes uses too much pepper. Do you like her cooking?
Oh, yes, it's wonderful.
Delightful, Mr. Wooster. I believe the woman is a genius.
Absolutely.
She's been with me 7 years now, and in all that time she has never failed to exhibit the highest culinary standards. For 7 years I have lived in constant apprehension that some evil person might lure her away from me. She has received several offers, lucrative offers, to accept employment elsewhere. You may understand my dismay, then, when this morning it happened. She turned in her notice.
Good Lord.
But I am thankful to say the worst has been averted. The matter has been resolved. Jane is not leaving me.
Good egg.
Good egg, indeed, though the expression is not familiar to me. I do not remember coming across it in any of your books. And speaking of your books, may I say that what has impressed me about them even more than the moving poignancy of the actual narrative is your philosophy of life. If there were more men like you, Mr. Wooster, the world would be a better place.
This was the exact opposite of my Aunt Agatha's opinion. She always thought I was a pestilence on the world, but I let it go.
Let me tell you, Mr. Wooster, that I appreciate your splendid defiance of the outworn fetishes imposed on us by an archaic social system. I appreciate it. In the magnificent words of Lord Bletchmore in Only a Factory Girl, be her origin ne'er so humble, a good woman is the equal of the finest lady on earth.
Really? Do you believe that?
I do, Mr. Wooster. I am ashamed to say that there was a time when I was like other men, a slave to the idiotic idea of class distinction. But since I've read your books, it seems to me that...
So, you think it's all right for a person in what might be called the upper class to marry a girl who might be described as being from the lower class?
Most assuredly I do, Mr. Wooster.
And did you know that young Bingo, your nephew, wants to marry a waitress?
I did not know that, but I honor him for it.
Then you don't object?
On the contrary.
Oh, that's marvelous. Now, I hope you won't think I'm butting in, but, well...
Yes? What is it?
Well... What I mean to say is, his allowance and all that, the money you're good enough to give him, he was rather hoping you could up it a bit.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't do that. You see, in my position, I am compelled to save every penny. I will gladly continue my nephew's existing allowance, but I cannot afford more. It would not be fair to my wife.
Your wife? But you're not married.
Not yet. But I intend to change that in the very near future. The lady who for years has cooked so well for me honored me by accepting my hand this very morning. Now let him try to take her away from me.
Shortly after lunch, I sent a message outlining the situation to poor old Bingo. Later that day, as I lay in my recliner with a cold towel over my forehead, Jeeves entered and said,
"Young Mr. Little has been trying to reach you on the telephone, sir. He has called several times."
"No, bet he has."
"He seemed a trifle agitated."
"That's not surprising. Now, Jeeves, brace yourself and bite the bullet. I'm afraid I've got bad news for you. That scheme of yours, reading those books to old Mr. Little, has blown a fuse."
"They did not soften him."
"Oh, they did. That's the trouble. Jeeves, I'm sorry to say that fiancée of yours, Miss Watson, the cook, you know, well, the long and short of it is that she's chosen riches instead of honest worth, if you know what I mean."
"Sir?"
"She's thrown you over and gotten engaged to old Mr. Little."
"Indeed, sir."
"You don't seem very upset."
"The fact is, sir, I anticipated such an outcome."
"Then why on earth did you suggest such a scheme?"
"To tell the truth, sir, I was not wholly averse to a severance of my relations with Miss Watson. In fact, I greatly desired it. I respect Miss Watson exceedingly, but I have seen for some time that we are not suited. Now, the other young person with whom I have an understanding..."
"Great Scott, Jeeves! There is another?"
"Yes, sir."
"How long has this been going on?"
"For some weeks, sir. I was greatly attracted to her when we first met during a dance at Camberwell."
"Oh, no. You don't mean..."
"Yes, sir. By an odd coincidence, it is the same young lady that interested Mr. Bingo. A fetching last name, Mabel. I have placed your evening libation on the small table. Good night, sir."
And with that, Jeeves shimmered back into his room. Now, do you think, knowing Jeeves as we do, that he concocted this entire scheme so he would wind up with the waitress in the end? Would Jeeves be capable of such subterfuge, such conniving manipulation? Perhaps, after all, it was just coincidence. We hope you've enjoyed our audio presentation of Jeeves in the Springtime by P.G. Woodhouse. Our players were Ian Buchanan as Bertie, Byron Scott as Jeeves, Terry Yates as Bingo, Kelly Moore was Mabel, and Brad Buchanan was the elder Mr. Little. The show was narrated by and engineered by Darren Helwedge and adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Post-production by Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter. We hope you'll join us again next week for another classic story brought to you by the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater here on KBIA.